Okay, so Pablo asked me to give some more pedagogical talk on disorder, sigma models, and all this in application to graphene. So this will be more like sort of kind of tutorial type, but I will try to keep it short. And yeah, there are already some questions here concerning so intervalle versus intervalle scattering. And so that's, this will partly sort of explain the reasons for different effects and different type of scattering. So let me, I don't know how far I can go in this time, but the main ideas, well, so what I will start first, just to give you a general sort of briefly overviewing general ideas of classification, which are related to those two main words here will be symmetries and topologies. Yeah, so that's yeah, so it all will be about sort of Anderson localization in graphene, and actually not only in graphene and other systems. So I will not be interested in aspects which are related to, say, different dependence of the semi-classical conductivity on different types of disorder. Again, this is what you should calculate first on semi-classical level with some self-consistent Born. So my question will be, what happens then? Once, what happens on scales larger than the Minkowski paths? Yeah, that's so roughly speaking the ideology. If we first can calculate conductivity semi-classically on a scale of Minkowski paths, yeah, but then the quantum interference effects will start coming into play, and localization may develop, or maybe anti-localization, or maybe some criticality, and this basically will be related to this symmetries and topologies classification. Yeah, and then of course, once you can classify the system, yeah, and we will see, well, briefly describe as there is a rich zoo of these systems in this classification, and now one should look at particular models of graphene and see which animals of the zoo you you get in each particular sort of microscopic type of realization. So let me go from the microscopic model and to the particular effect theory. So this will be So this will be classification symmetries and topologies, which can be done on two different levels. So one is the level of Hamiltonians, and another is the level of effective field theories, which are sigma models. And finally, of course, you can, once you know which of these effective theories you have, you still should study what happens with the theory in the infrared limit at long distances or low temperatures. And this is, so this is the infrared behavior of the particular theory. And that's more or less three parts of you. And they are also independent. So identification of the affected theory is related to symmetry, which is easier. Once you know what symmetries you should look at, yeah, you can just check your Hamiltonian, what symmetries it satisfies. Topology is something much more tricky. Okay, so all this, would be nice material for one semester lecture course. So let's see how much we can go in. I don't know. Good. So symmetries, yeah. There is a, by now we understand there is a general symmetry classification of disordered systems, which is, yeah, first of all, I will not give the full history references, and so that's just let me mention my own papers, and you can look there and find the full reference there. Yeah. So on graphene, if I will come to graphene at all, yeah, hopefully this is by Strovsky, Gorney, and myself, and starting from 2006 till several papers. And then there is a more recent, there are two papers by Misha Titov with us. Well, I don't remember, it's probably 10 or 11. And there is a review on Anderson transition by Ferdinand Evers and myself, which is Redmond Fees, well, in 2008. And then a part of this review was modified and reused in for a book and then reprinted. So it's a book on Anderson localization 50 and also it's reprinted in International Journal of Modern Physics B in 2010, I'm not sure. And this, well, it's we also with Pasha Ostrovsky and Gordon. So. Okay. Good. Actually, it's a very nice book in general on Anderson localization. There are many other reviews. Good. So, symmetry classification. Yeah. So, there is now understanding that there is a 10 symmetry classes of disordered systems, which, so first of all, the standard classes that are known as Wigner-Dyson classes, and this are so which symmetry have depends on whether you have or you don't have time reversal symmetry. It's all about, so we can see the disordered system. So all accidental symmetries, like just spatial symmetry and all that, that's all broken, yeah, just because you have impurities, yeah? So we just look at symmetries that each member of Hamiltonian has, each member of ensembles, you just put randomly impurities, yeah? So there is no spatial symmetry, yeah? So symmetries that can be there, are symmetries of the type like time reversal symmetry or spin invariance. Yeah. So, okay, so now if you have time invariant, you have spin invariance, and depending on whether you have them or not, you may have four different situations, and it turns out that here it doesn't matter. And so you get three different classes that are known as well, have names, yeah? So this class is, I will explain why, what are the names. It's a Q. Okay. So they are also, since I related to standard random matrix theories, they correspond to random matrix ensembles that are G, U, E, G, O, E, and G, S, E, yeah? But this random matrix ensembles are ensembles when you have just a matrix and all matrix elements are completely random, whereas the Hamiltonian is, of course, not this. However, from the point of view of symmetry, it has the same symmetry as this. Okay. Represented. Okay. Now, what was, yeah, and this is from, yeah, Wigner-Dyson, yeah, 50s and 60s, yeah. Now, what was understood more recently that there are more asymmetries, more types of ensembles that are, that have some type of particle hole symmetry, which is namely, you have chiral classes, and this is where your Hamiltonian has a structure in some basis, which is of block of diagonal some basis. Yeah, so this, sure. Yes.
Just a question. I mean, I know roughly what time reversal symmetry is, but what do you mean with spin invariance? Does it mean that the Hamiltonian remains invariant under any type of SU2 rotation in spin space?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you have, yes. So imagine, yeah, you have electrons with random potential. So if it's just a potential, it preserves this spin invariance. In the moment you have spin orbit interaction, you break the invariance. So depending on this, so if you have time reversal, then if you have strong spin orbit, you will have this situation, and if you don't have spin orbit, you will have this situation, and that's exactly will correspond to the two cases of weak localization. Okay, so this will correspond to this case of weak localization, and this will correspond to the case of weak localization. So just already at this point, I say this has close connection to what was. So there's difference.
T minus, just now, does it mean that there's no time reversal?
No, time magnetic field. Magnetic field
so
kills
does, it doesn't mean that it's minus under T representation or anything.
No. So in both these cases, well, so formal difference between these two is the following. So here are the time reversal squares to unity, and here are time reversal squares to minus unity.
Okay.
That's So yeah, one can prove that there are only two options for. So time reversal is anti-unitary operation, so it can square up unit or minus unit, depending on this. Okay. Good. And it's just a simple way. So when I just want to say, when does it appear for electron systems? Yeah, that's so formal way to say it is this one. Okay, now the chiral ensembles are when they are all of diagonal in some basis, and again turns out that you can classify them in the same way. So there will be again this plus minus and minus plus minus, and so they are correspondingly called chiral orthogonal chiral symplectic. I mean, the corresponding random matrix ensembles, these names. And they also, so here there will be BD1, this is A3, and this one is C2. Yeah, and it's, of course, doesn't look as very natural notations here, but it's, I will roughly explain where they come from. And finally, there is a third family. And these are so-called the Golubov-Degen classes. And for the name, it's clear that they appear naturally in superconducting systems. And this is very Hamiltonian, as a typical Golubov-Degen structure, which means that it's H minus H is for delta minus delta star. Well, I can put here H also. So there should be H equal to H, because to have a Hermitian, and delta should be minus delta T, I guess. No, I can Hermitian, right? So it should be Hermitian. So delta.
Usual Bogolubov-Degen is just two deltas.
Huh? No, that's most. This is more general. So you can write Bogolubov-Degen and use fermionic stride. So that's the most general. Now, depending on what you have spin preserved or not, you will have probably you mean already some special situation when. Okay, now it turns out that in this case there are four classes, and that's I don't have to explain why this, but it's so there will be just all four situations when it will be plus. So it's again will be T and S, and you will have plus minus minus plus. And minus minus, so this will be two different classes, and that's because for Bogolubov-Degen spin invariance and this particle hole symmetry are in fact coupled with each other. So now these four classes again have names. So this most less symmetric class is D. This is C. This is called C1. Let's call this. Good. So now. Yeah, one can show that under certain natural assumptions about types of symmetries that man, that's a complete classification. Now the names, and this is where the beauty is, and that was understood by Alvin and Sandow. There is a one-to-one connection between these symmetries and big families of symmetric spaces. Yeah. Okay, now in order to explain what this, I should probably explain what I've said. Or I'm not sure. Does everybody know what I'm saying? Probably not. Yeah. So what are symmetric spaces? Yeah. Symmetric spaces are constructions of the time G over K. The G and K are groups. And it's a formal definition. The formal one. So they are Lie groups, yeah? And so the formal definition is that it's a Lie algebra of G is presented as a sum of two parts. So each element of G is a of so Lie so our group is obtained by exponentiating the Lie algebra. And so each element here is the sum of these two. And so you split the group algebra sort of into the space in two orthogonal parts, roughly speaking. Yeah, and This should be so-called involutive automorphism, which in simple terms means the following, that K is subgroup, so that if you commute K with K, this will be again K. And however, P is not a subgroup. P, if you commute P and P, will be also K. And P this you commute with K, will be P. So this is I will give an example and you will see. It's in fact. So this is so if you have this decomposition of the group, since typically it means that K is a maximal, in certain sense maximal. In all cases, it will be a maximal subgroup of G. There is no larger subgroup that would be in between them. Yeah? Then this is what is called symmetric space. So now, the symmetric spaces that will arise here are those that are obtained from groups, the standard classical groups, UN, ON, and SPN, by dividing out the maximal subgroup. And so let me give an example. Let's take the class A. Yeah? So the class A is some version of symmetries at all. Yeah? It's just least symmetric class. Yeah. So the matrices here, the Hamiltonians are just Hermitian matrices. Yeah. So now do Hermitian matrices form Lie algebra. So what happens if you commute two Hermitian matrices? Do Hermitian matrices form a Lie algebra? What happens if you commute two Hermitian matrices? What do you all get? You'll get anti-Hermitian. Yeah, so they almost form Hermitian. So what you should do if you take multiplies with I, this will be a Lie algebra. And of course, if you now exponentiate it, it will be a Lie group. Yeah. So if you exponentiate I times Hermitian matrices, you get unitary matrices. It will be just a group UN. So as you see, the set of just all Hermitian Hamiltonians corresponds to just to Lie algebra of the group UN, which we. So EH is an element of UM, or exponential IH is an element of UM. Huh? Okay, so this makes a correspondence between this symmetry class and the corresponding symmetric space. Yeah, that's one of examples of this symmetric space. It's very simple, it's just a group, yeah? Okay, now let's take another example. Namely, let's go here to GOE. Now we have time reversal. Yeah, it means that our Hamiltonians are real, yeah? Just real matrices. Yeah, they not only Hermitian but also real symmetric matrices. Yeah? So do real symmetric matrices form a Lie algebra? Well, we already know we should probably multiply by I. Will it help? So, according to this, we would have to multiply by I. So if you take two real symmetric matrices. So if you commute, well, of course, they will be imaginary symmetric matrices. If you commute this, you will not get, yeah? Of course, a symmetric. So they don't form a group. So the group, however, it's almost a group. So if you take the group ON, yeah, it's obtained by, so its elements are exponential by K. Where K are now should be anti-symmetric, yeah? They should be Hermitian and anti-symmetric. So anti-symmetric matrices form a Lie algebra. Yeah? It means that symmetric. Now, so what are symmetric matrices? So you take all Hermitian matrices and subtract anti-symmetric, yeah. So to say, it's an orthogonal space, yeah. So therefore, we see that the here the correspondence was UN. Then here the corresponding will be UM over ON. So that's a typical example of a symmetric space. Yeah. So if you take all Hermitian matrices sort of remove a part. So any Hermitian matrix is a sum of symmetric and anti-symmetric, yeah, obviously, yeah? So you remove the part which corresponds to anti-symmetric and you get a symmetric matrix. Sorry, it's another way around. I'm sorry. That's what you have. I'm sorry. Okay, if you do the same here, you will get Um over SPN. And in fact, yeah. So, you can repeat it. And in fact, in this way, you can go over all this list, and you will see that all of them will be symmetric spaces that are corresponding to the obtained from groups U, O, and SP by dividing them. So we can construct out of U and SP exactly 10 families of symmetric spaces, and which are U, O, SP themselves. Then there are symmetric spaces of the type U over O, U over SP, S O over U, SP over U. That's 7. And then there are symmetric spaces of the type U to M divided by UM cross UM. And the same with ON with SP. So it's exactly 10 if you count, and there is no more. Because that's the only cable to get a maximal. So
excuse me, what is SP?
Symplectic. So these are those that contain a. So unitary matrix contain the matrix U. Yeah, it's U dagger U times is equal to 1. Yeah, they contain unit matrix. Yeah, so this will contain the matrix 1 minus 1. Yeah, that's but these are only sort of big families of groups that of Lie groups that exist. So now the statement is that all of them correspond. There is a full classification in this way according to the symmetries. Now the second step of classification, I can write the spaces here. Yeah.
Just for completeness, the BDG classes, they are which ones here? Do you know this?
So maybe I can. To be quicker, I should look at. But maybe you look at the table. Take a table and. And look at them. I mean, it's more or less this thing. I can do it, but it's of course okay. Okay. Anyway, the next step of plus is looking at field theories. So it turns out. So now, we want to, for each of these disordered systems, we can ask what happens on long scales from the point of view of localization. Yeah? So we know on the level of diagrammatic theories that localization, it's about Couperons and diffusions and corresponding loops. Yeah. So the field theories is a way to have an effective theory which only keeps this long distance degrees of freedom. Yeah.
If we take the example of the weak anti-localization,
yes.
So you have a magnetic field is breaking the time reversal symmetry, but anyhow the it does not break all symmetries because certain spin are still the symmetry of the state are still there, but because then you have this interference and the interface.
What is symmetry of the state?
The symmetry of the initial. But field states.
What? No. Which symmetry?
Yeah, but that's
tell me what symmetry.
My question is: when you put a magnetic field and you break time reversal symmetry,
yes.
do you break all symmetries or you break a subset of symmetry?
You break time reversal. You may still have one of those symmetries in special cases, but only as a Dirac point. So as a Dirac point with special types of disorder, you may keep. Yeah. So what is special about the symmetries this chiral symmetry and the loop of the Gen symmetries. So they're very easily broken. For example, they're broken at the moment you add a constant to the Hamiltonian. Just add, when you add just a constant to the Hamiltonian, you immediately break this symmetry. You also break this symmetry. So you may have this symmetry only at some special point in your spectrum. For graphene, the spectrum is obviously the Dirac point, yeah? So it's a Dirac point. The clean graphene Hamiltonian has these symmetries as a Dirac point. So if the disorder preserves them, you will still have them as a Dirac point. Away from Dirac point, there is no chance to have them. So these are, in this sense, this symmetry, this chiral and the loop of the Gen are much sort of less, much more fragile, yeah? And you may have only for very, in very special situations. Whereas this one are much more general. Yeah. Okay?
I think his question is about the internal symmetries, like pseudo spin that are not broken.
Like what?
Pseudo spin, you can have.
What is symmetry? Yeah, pseudo spin is not symmetry. That's a degree of freedom.
Sure, but you can have, say, a broken.
No, if you mean the symmetry, for example, one example. Yeah, no, I think it's a good question. Okay, now I think I understand. Imagine you don't have intervalley scattering. You have magnetic field, but the scattering is only intravalley. Yeah? Then, of course, you have a lot of symmetries because it's exactly the pseudo-spin, namely the symmetries that mix two valleys. Yeah? They all preserve. Yeah? So each valley, yeah. So this symmetry will be there. Yeah? That's okay. Yeah, no, that's probably what you... Okay, good. Field theory. So the field idea is the following. So we all know that, well, those who know, disorder that long distance, so I should stop already here, or?
Now it's 10 past 12, okay. So maybe you just finish with the...
Okay, let me quickly say what... So the field theory is the following, yeah? That's, we all know that there are diffuson and Couperon modes, yeah? That, yeah, I think also on your plots, that are responsible for all these localization effects. Huh? The idea of field theory is that we want to have something which only keeps these modes and kind of interaction between them. Interaction is not interaction in the sense of Coulomb interaction, but rather what on the diagram level would be the just coupling of these modes. Yeah, so that's a Hikami boxes. Yeah, that's a couple. So this is kind of interaction between these modes due to. Now, it turns out that the effective field theories have, it's more or less Ginzburg-Landau for localization, yeah? So now the question, what is the symmetry? What should be the symmetry of the order parameter for Ginzburg-Landau? And since these are modes which corresponds to sort of particle-hole propagating together, it's not very surprising that to get the symmetry, you will have a matrix. Ginzburg-Landau, so to say, parameter, which will be, in certain sense, a product of psi and psi bigger. That's what sort of propagates here. Now, this is a matrix in some space, which is a replica space, which you should include in your system. Now, why we have to do this, and this is because, well, technically on the level of derivation of the field theory, we need to reproduce those diagrams, and the reason is we have quenched disorder. Yeah, so these lines are so-called quenched disorder, and technically it means that there is no fermionic loops that could be inserted in such a line. And in order to get this correctly, there are two ways to do this. One so-called replica trick. One introduces many copies of your system, and then in the end, the number of copies is sent to zero. And another option is supersymmetry. One introduces bosonic and fermionic degrees of freedom. Well, it's a non-interacting theory. I'm not speaking about real interaction. So then you can, since it's non-interacting, the statistics should not, we can think in terms of fermions or bosons. And it turns out that we can do this replica trick both in fermions and boson version, or we can do supersymmetry, which combines them. And the advantage of supersymmetry is that this is something which is sort of fully well-defined, whereas replica trick will lead, they'll have to introduce n copies of the system, and then in the end send this n to zero. And first n should be integer, and so that's not exactly well-defined procedure. So that's, but it turns out on a level of perturbation theory, they're all equivalent. at the moment, one should think about non-perturbative topological effects, and so that's one should be careful with replicativity. Although in most cases, it's if one is smart enough, in many cases one still can use it. But supersymmetry. Now, what? So the supersymmetry. Okay. So what will be the structure of the field theories? It turns out the structure of field theories will be so-called sigma model. You know. So what is sigma model? Okay. It's a theory which has an action which is, well, let's think about, I don't know, graphene or two-dimensional system, but it's maybe in any dimension will be the same. Well, it's minus, well, I'm not sure in the coefficient. I think it's 8 red q phrase. So, so grad is a spatial gradient, and Q is a matrix. It's a very simple action, and that will be the same for any sigma model. Yeah, the simplest sigma model is just a vector sigma model. Yeah, just a vector. It just depends on coordinate. It's like you would describe a ferromagnet, or it should just it's a standard description of. Okay, so Q is a matrix in the space that I just tried to describe, this replica or supersymmetric space, and what is crucial here is this Q squared is equal to 1. So Q leaves, if it would be a vector, it would mean that it just leaves on some sphere. So Q is a matrix and leaves on something which is more something like sphere, but a bit more complicated. And it turns out that Q belongs again to symmetric spaces. And so let me just finish. So Q belongs to some symmetric space. And moreover, these are exactly the same 10 families of symmetric spaces that will appear here when we will write. So I can write all symmetric spaces for Hamiltonian, so they've got Hamiltonian symmetric space. I can also write symmetric spaces for sigma model. And it will be exactly the same 10 families of symmetric spaces, but they will appear here in different order. So each of these classes will be characterized by some symmetric space. So as an example, so for this simplest class U, the symmetric space that will appear here will be U2N over UN cross UN. So notice that this N and this N have totally different meanings. So this N was a your Hamiltonian that was a huge matrix million by million. So this N is this replica index, which you should send to zero actually in the end. Or for supersymmetry, it will be some supersymmetric generalization of this, but it will be like 4 or something. This n will be number. So in some sense, this n is something for unity. For replicates, it's n to 0. Yeah? So basically the meaning of this, I can even explain why it appears. Yeah. So this 2n becomes because you should, you know, to get this, you should always pair a retarded and advanced Green function. Yeah? So diffusions and Cooperons only appear in, it's never. So basically this 2n arises because we should double, so we should introduce retarded and retarded. So there will be a matrix, should be retarded psi bigger, it will be like a matrix. So it will be retarded, advanced in this direction, and retarded, advanced in this direction. However, the blocks that will be only interesting for us will be this one, it's retarded, advanced, and this one. So it means that we should take the whole matrix and remove this, and remove this. Yeah? And that's exactly what this tells us. Take U to N and remove UN cross UN. Yeah? That's how these things appear. And same 10, in same way you can understand symmetric spaces for sigma models for all other classes. And you will see that it's just same 10 big families that appear here.
I mean, I think partly you have already answered the discussion that I wanted to ask. I mean, you said that this is a generalization, so to say, of a vector sigma model.
Oh, vector sigma model. It was full sigma. Usual vector sigma model also of this. So it lives on a sphere, and sphere is also a symmetric space. Yeah.
Yes, but my contact. I mean, I can always diagonalize my matrix, and the trace remains invariant. Can I not simply represent your problem in terms of a vector sigma model?
No. How? I don't understand what you're saying, yeah? There is a matrix?
Q.
Here's a matrix. Q is a function of R.
Yeah,
Q is a field, yeah? It's, of course, for any given R, you can diagonalize it.
Yeah?
Between some basis, yeah. So it's, but the basis will change.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it'll...
sure.
That's the way of parametrizing.
Of course you can parametrize, yeah. No, that's, yeah, but it. No, you cannot reduce matrix sigma model to vector sigma model. It's, that's different number of degrees of freedom, for example.
Seems clear.
You will have this.
So then you will have angles.
Yeah, of course. It's very good what you say, but it's just a way to parameterize it. You will have some angular variables, and you will have some kind of radial variables. Okay, good.
I think we should stop about now. I mean,
about now. Okay.
You want to stop?
Yeah. Okay, good. So that's the idea of classification. Yeah. So now what? The next step you let me describe. So next, then I don't know. I can. If you have time, I can continue. Later, if not, let me just describe it. So what you can do is the following. Yeah, what you do now, it turns out that symmetries is not all what you may have. Yeah, so it looks like, so the idea of symmetry classification is a standard theory for critical phenomena. Yeah, so we all know that universality classes of infrared behavior are determined by symmetries and by dimensionality of system. Yeah. So, for example, here, as I said, so all the fact that we have some weak localization here and weak anti-localization here and none of them here will just correspond to different symmetries. Yeah? It's a different content of these modes. Yeah? However, it turns out that it's not the whole picture, because in addition to this, the sigma model can also include some topological term. So now, whether this term may in principle arise depend on topology of the corresponding of the sigma. So sigma model is some sphere. Yeah? It lives on some complicated sphere. It's a Q of R. Yeah? So it's a mapping of your space into the manifold of the sigma model. Yeah. Now, if you compactify your space, and it turns out that it's a good idea to say that your space is a sphere. Say, including in case of graphene, it will be two-dimensional sphere. Yeah, and so then you will have a mapping of your two-dimensional sphere, or in general, d-dimensional sphere, into the manifold of the sigma model. So let me go there. Now, this mapping may have possibility of non-trivial homotopies. Yeah. So, for example, if you map sphere on the same sphere, we know that it can be any integer number of windings, yeah, like a circle in circumference circle or something. Yeah. So there is a homotopy group pi d of the sigma manifold that, in some cases, depending on so for these spaces and depending on dimensionalities, maybe either trivial. So it means there is no non-trivial homotopies, or maybe Z, or maybe Z2. And depending on this, such topological terms may arise. The fact that here they may not, but here they may arise. Yeah? And if they may arise, you should also start with some microscopic model and check whether such term does arise,
even for a given microscopic model or not.
Yeah? And when such terms arise, they, in addition to symmetry, determine the localization behavior. And it turns out that Dirac fermions is exactly the situation when such terms is, well, so more or less statement, if you have two decoupled valleys, such terms will arise in sigma models, yeah, necessarily. And they will influence the behavior in addition to symmetry. Okay, so maybe let me say two last minutes. So let me say words now, and I don't know, we can later go into details. So just statements and some what you get out of this in two particular, I mean, three particular situations.
Yeah.
Imagine you have decoupled valleys. So most interesting situations appear when you have decoupled valleys. Yeah. So no intervalley scattering. Yeah, that's by far. Yeah, if you have all types of disorder in graphene, it's just a boring two-dimensional, standard two-dimensional system from the point of view of Anderson localization. It's just a nothing special. Yeah, it's the semi-classical conductivity may be different, of course, but the localization itself will be. So the interesting situation arises when only special types of disorder are present. Of course, in reality, you will always have all types of disorder. However, some of them may be much, much weaker than the other, and so there will be parametrically broad ranges of temperatures when you can neglect some other disorders and only look at the dominant one, and then you will have some interesting situations. Yeah? So the most interesting situation are when there are decoupled valleys, and then depends on still on what types of you have. Then it's very simple. You just have one species of Dirac Fuhrman because the other one is just decoupled. Yeah? You have two valleys, you just consider them separately. There is a scattering here, there is a scattering here, but this you have forbidden. Yeah? So just look at them separately. Yeah? Just one species of Dirac Fuhrman. You can add to it random vector potential, in principle random mass. Random velocity turns out to be fully irrelevant perturbation, so forget about it. So if you have only random potential, then you are in the symmetry class A2. That's a class that you normally have when you have spin orbit interaction. Here's the role of spin is played by sublate. Yeah? So you have A2, and in addition, you have a topological term, Z2 topological term, Z2 non-trivial. And this is because of Dirac Fuhrman nature. That's, in some sense, Berry phase that shows here, if you want. Yeah, that's So this tells you that at large conductance, you will have anti-localization. And this tells you that there cannot be localization at all in the system. Yeah. Essentially, it means that even if you start from relatively small conductivity, it will flow to supermetal orbital. Yeah. So this flows to very large conductivity because of combination of these two things, anti-localization that is due to this symmetry class and topology.
But if you have a conventional two-dimensional gas with strong spin orbit, that doesn't have a topological term?
No, it doesn't. And therefore, there is a metal insulator transition. In conventional spin orbit, two-dimensional gas with spin orbit, there is a metal insulator transition. Yeah. You can make a disorder such strong that it will localize. Yeah. Here, this doesn't localize because of this term. At large conductance, they're very similar because there is anti-localization. But the point is that at small conductance, they behave differently. So okay. Now, if you have random potential plus random vector potential, this is, for example, we have ripples. Yeah, that's, you don't believe that they, well, argue that they produce actually both of them. Yeah,
that's a remarkable situation.
You have symmetry class A plus topological term. So the symmetry class A, yeah. So unfortunately, I don't have time to say that's exactly the sigma model that describes the quantum Hall effect. This is a sigma model that was obtained by Pruskin to describe the quantum Hall effect. So this is a Z topological term. And it turns out, and you know, in the quantum Hall effect, it describes a transition between one plateau and the other plateau. It turns out that here, without any magnetic field, you are exactly at the critical point of the quantum Hall transition. So it's not just a topological term. It's a theta equal to pi. It's the value of the coefficient in front of this topological term that places you in the quantum Hall critical point. So this is a quantum Hall critical point. So the remarkable prediction is that in this situation, the conductivity of graphene is critical. So you go to infinitely large distance, as long as you neglect the scattering, you will just get a constant. It will get a constant, and the constant will be sigma equals to 4 because of two valleys, two spins, times sigma critical, sigma at quantum Hall transition.
Can you tune theta?
By magnetic field.
Okay.
When you add magnetic field, you will go off explanation. Okay, yeah, so, yeah, sorry for, but at least I reached in some sense. There are other situations when you may have some interesting non-trivial behavior, but only at the Dirac point. So this is actually, is not restricted to Dirac point, yeah? So, but of course, the reality, you will see it only near Dirac point, because at far away from Dirac point, you will never be able to reach this point. There are special situations at Dirac point when you preserve one of those symmetries, chiral or Hugo-Lippmann symmetries, yeah? And this is an example, if you have only vacancies, if you just take a lattice and remove sides, yeah, that's, then it will be also special as a Dirac point. Yeah. But so that's what was in the paper by Jean and us recently, but this I don't have time to discuss now.
Okay, thank you.